Next week, we're in a study called I Choose, and we're looking at the book of Proverbs. Next week, we get to talk about the lazy person, and then the following week, the friend. And then the week after that, the lazy friend. No, just kidding. Actually, the week after that, Daryl's going to be speaking. He was going to speak the week that we called church off because of weather, and he was really disappointed, and I was disappointed. So we're going to have him speak on the Palm Sunday weekend. And he's actually going to continue this theme of I Choose. And we're actually going to conclude the entire series on Easter when we talk about the ultimate choice, the choice of receiving Christ into our life. And so that's going to be on Easter for that. And you know someone that you feel really needs to hear a message related to that decision, we urge you to invite them to come. Well, as we've talked about this series, when we started with Moses and then we had the Mission Sunday, all of these related to this theme of choosing, I just feel like each week it's important to talk about the power of choice and this power that we have. And no, it's true, we're not the masters of our own fate. We can't, you know, just overcome every possible thing that might come to us or come our way. But neither are we held hostage to feelings and desires that find their way into our hearts so that we're just helpless. We have choices that we can make. And mainly in this series, I want to emphasize that we have far more opportunity and freedom to make these choices than we realize. And that when we do nothing, and when we let ourselves be carried away by the river of some wayward desire or some addictive habit or some life-dominating sin or some other circumstance, it can seem like you've made no choice at all when those things happen. But the fact is that you have chosen. And the reason why it feels like you haven't is because you've made the easy choice. And I hope to encourage you to make the harder choices, the choice to go against the river's current, the choice that costs something but pays great reward. And these choices exist in all areas of our life. And most importantly, in our development as disciples of Jesus. So this is what we want to encourage as we continue with this theme of making choices. So our theme is, your choices today will define your life tomorrow. That's why choices are so important, is because they're going to have a serious effect on what happens in the days to come. And the scripture that we have to relate that to our lives is Galatians 6:7. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. So the choices we make are like planting seeds. That's what's happening. And then the sowing, the harvest that comes later, is a result of the choices that we've made. So I just want to say, the things that you're letting yourself live with, the forfeiting that you're allowing by not answering and living up to God's, living out God's calling on your life, the drifting that you may have resigned yourself to in your relationship with God, the coasting, the slippage in your spiritual life, the callousness to the Spirit's voice, all of these are choices. And if you're making them today, then you're growing a harvest of heartache that is heading your way tomorrow in the future that is rushing toward you. But if on the other hand, if you're making the harder kind of choice of answering the call of God that he has on your life, of challenging your complacency, of pursuing God, of reaching for higher ground, even though progress seems slow, of responding to the Spirit's promptings, then these choices, while they seem at the time not to be all that significant, and not seem to be bearing all that much result, they are putting seeds in the ground that are surely going to grow a harvest that you'll have a hard time even believing when it happens. That's what I want us to grasp, because we can just get to where we don't really think it matters You know, these kind of small choices that we're making on a daily basis. But sometimes those choices have larger, more significant impact on our future than we realize. This living by faith life that every disciple of Jesus has been signed up for is, in fact, a challenging life. We're called on to trust Jesus, to trust what he tells us, to trust what the Bible tells us, to trust all of that to be true. And you have to choose that before you get to see all that comes from that, before you get to see the glory and the joy and the blessing and the harvest that has been promised. I always want to see the goods before I invest in them. I want to know exactly what I'm getting. I want to feel the piece of fruit. You know, I want to choose just what I already know I'm going to be happy with, even though at times you bite into that apple and it's all mealy and, you know. But the best you can, you want to see ahead of time to make sure that your choices are going to be the things you're happy with. But that's called living by sight. And that's not the deal that we've been given. God wants to know if you will choose to be a devoted follower of Christ simply on his word. Now he gives us much more than that. I mean, there's affirmations along the way, but we're not being shown the full picture. And that's why sometimes you can feel burnt out, and sometimes you can feel like, I'm just doing all of these things. I'm trying to follow God. Is it really worth it all? It's because we're still living by faith. We haven't come to this place of really fully understanding or realizing all that God has as a result of the investment we're making in the living by faith life. But he's going to show us that it's going to be every bit worth it and more when we do. So today we zoom in on the foolish person that Proverbs talks about. And it's important to say that if you decide to pursue being an all-out follower of Christ, at times you are going to look foolish to some, because the kind of life that Jesus calls us to is sometimes upside down compared to how our world looks at things. It looks foolish to love our enemies. It looks foolish to give sacrificially. It looks foolish to delight in difficulties that make us dependent on God. And it looks foolish at times to hold to ancient values that the Bible teaches to some. But to God, it looks wise. And what we often mean by foolish is that we weren't being very smart, or we weren't thinking, or we did something crazy. When we use the word foolish a lot of times, like, you know, running out of gas. I mean, it doesn't really seem to take a lot of smarts to look at the gas gauge and realize you're getting low. And, you know, why would we ever run out of gas unless our gas gauge is broken? And then that's another story. Or, you know, not wearing safety glasses. You know, that could be a foolish thing that you might think of afterwards if an accident happened. Or, you know, going out on icy roads. That's why we're so cautious in East Tennessee. We don't want to get out there and slide in the ditch like all those northern people do, you know. Or what really gets me when I feel like I've been foolish is paying too much for something. You know, like that could be the worst thing you would ever do. You know, pay too much for something. Or not setting our clocks ahead the night of daylight savings time, which all of you can feel really good that you weren't foolish about that. But, and that's, there's a kind of foolishness about that, but the kind of foolish person that we're talking about today is really not that kind of person. It's the kind we find in Proverbs as the person who has a much more serious issue going on. And interestingly, it's found in the book of Psalms that we find this issue really pointed out. And it's Psalms 14:1. The fool, also in Psalm 53, The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. This is the kind of fool we're talking about. The one who denies that there is a God. Now here's the scary part, is that sometimes I live like there is no God. I would never say there is no God, but I live like there is no God. I live like he can't see all that I do. I live like he can't listen to all that I say, or he can't know the deep things hidden in my heart. So I might say, no, that's not me. I would never say there is no God, but sometimes I live as though there is no God. So that's why sometimes I am a fool, and sometimes why you are a fool as well. But we must know that to enjoy a yes life, that means a life that is filled with peace, a life that is filled with purpose, a life that you can say in the truest sense, you know, yes, I love this life. To enjoy a yes life, you must refuse the way of folly. And Proverbs chapter 9 has two people who are calling out for you to accept their offer. And the first one is the woman, wisdom. And we talked about her last week. But there also is the woman, folly. And the woman, folly, is loud, and she is undisciplined and without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, and she calls out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way, let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of the grave. So folly is calling out for us to follow her. How can we know that we are following folly? Well, first of all, a fool refuses to be teachable. We look into Proverbs, and we're going to look at a number of these Proverbs today. You have just a few of them in your program, but we're going to look at many more. So a fool refuses to be teachable. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Fool has no time. He despises wisdom and discipline. That's another form of learning, discipline. And then in Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice. So one of the reasons a fool isn't interested is because he already thinks he knows what's right. You know, he already thinks that I've got this figured out. I don't need any instruction. I don't need any advice. I understand all that I need to know. And then in Proverbs 13:19, a longing fulfilled is sweet to the soul, but fools detest turning from evil. Turning from evil is this indication that you're on the wrong path. You need instruction. You need to be told to turn the bus around. But a fool detests turning from evil. And even beyond that, fools mock at making amends for sin. But goodwill is found among the upright. Fools think it's just silly that you would try to right some wrong or make amends for some sin. And here's the Proverbs. Proverbs 17:10, that's interesting. A rebuke impresses a man of discernment. I mean, all you have to do is say something to a man of discernment, and that sinks into his heart. It does something to him. He's changed by that. But 100 lashes to a fool doesn't have half the impression that's made on a simple rebuke to a man who is a person of discernment. And then a discerning man keeps wisdom in view, but a fool's eyes wander to the ends of the earth. And here's the idea that a fool just can't even concentrate on what's important. He's distracted by so many other things He can't focus on wisdom. He can't focus on learning. He can't focus on the truth that he needs to incorporate into his life. And a fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but definitely delights in airing his own opinions. Now we kind of understand a little bit more of why a fool isn't really interested in wisdom. It's because he's more interested in sharing his own opinions about things than he is listening to something that might actually help him. And then we have these two proverbs. The first one says, answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. So here's this encouragement that there's going to be times that it's appropriate for us to address someone who's kind of thinking that they know all that they should know, and they really don't. And we're trying to help them understand that. So we answer them in that way. But then, and here people think that the Bible's contradicting itself, it says, but do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself. And it's just this idea that we have to have the wisdom and discernment to know what times, when it is appropriate to answer someone who's being foolish in this kind of way, and when it is that they're just not going to listen, and all we're doing in some way is kind of fueling that folly, and we might get swept up into it somehow. So we have to have discernment and wisdom in knowing even how to deal with people who are fools in this kind of way. So what this is saying to us is that we never get beyond the place of needing to learn, of needing to grow in wisdom. We never get to where we don't need to listen to anyone else, where we have all the answers. We never graduate from needing correction even, and sometimes, you know, just flat out rebuke. And we never come to the place where we don't need to be teachable. And if you think that you have come to that place, then what's happened is you've become a fool. You have fallen prey to the way of folly. A fool has refused to be teachable. And secondly, a fool lacks tongue and temper control. Tongue and temper control. Let's talk about the tongue. The tongue, Proverbs 15:2 says, the tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. It's quite a descriptive verb there, isn't it? That folly just doesn't come from the mouth of the fool. It just gushes out. It just gushes out. The wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. The word chattering means to babble or to talk excessively. It says, wise men store up, are they going beyond that? I must miss one here. The wise in heart accept commands, and I think we already read that one. A fool's talk brings a rod to his back, but the lips of the wise protect them. The fool's mouth is just going to get himself into trouble. It says in other places it's going to bring punishment. Because in the multitude of words, there's going to be sin there, another proverb tells us. A fool's mouth is his undoing, and his lips are a snare to his soul. So our tongues can get us into trouble. We can fall into backbiting. Just think of the different ways that your tongue can get you into trouble. You know, backbiting, and on the other hand, flattering, or lying, or cursing, or innuendo, or boasting, or running people down, or telling people off. I mean, there's just so many ways that our tongue, it's like a poison. It can just get us into trouble. And if we let our tongues have the control instead of us controlling them, then we've become a fool. There is a time to talk. There is a time that we need to be using our words. And words can be healing. You know, words can be helpful. Words can be convincing. They can be amazing. But When we don't have control over our tongue, that's when it gets us into trouble, when we're showing that we are a fool. And then on to temper. What about control of temper? The fool doesn't have it. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. When we just blow up, we just get, you know, angry, and we just let ourselves just fully explode, that's just showing that we've taken the way of folly. We've become a fool. A wise man fears the Lord and he shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless. Hot-headed. A fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. This is a great proverb. You know, I mean, the thing is, I mean, so many of us, and this happens to me. I think it happens to me most when I'm driving. I have the most trouble with other drivers. And I just, you know what I had to tell myself yesterday? Or not yesterday, but one day this past week. I just had to say, these people don't mean it. I mean, they don't know me. You know, they're not trying to get me angry. You know, they're not trying to do things that just I think are really stupid. You know, and I just had to really take a step back, because the thing is, it's so easy to feel like you're being insulted, you know, in one way or another, by what people do and by what people say. And it says a prudent man has the ability, he has the control over his spirit, that he can just go, you know what? I am not going to react to that. I could, but I'm not going to. A fool, on the other hand, he shows his annoyance at once. You know, and that's a good reminder to us. A quick-tempered man. So this turns it the other way around and says, okay, a fool is one who can't control his anger. But if we go to the other side and just say a quick-tempered man, he does foolish things. And a crafty man is hated. And you know that's happened to you. You know, when you've flown off the handle about something, and then, man, not too long after that, you just feel foolish. Why did I let myself get that way? Why did I let that happen? And then it is to a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Quick to quarrel. Listen, tempers, and you know this, tempers lead to trouble. We flare up at home, we flare up at work, we flare up with friends and with neighbors. We feel justified for getting angry, and sometimes we blame it on others. You know, it's like, I'm mad because you made me mad. But if we let ourselves live without temper control, we are following in the way of folly. If you just want to give that off and just say, you know, I can't help it, you know, it's what other people do, it's all those other drivers on the road, you know, if that's what you want to do, if you want to live without temper control, then you have just answered folly's call, and you've just taken a seat in her house and said, this is where I'm going to live, in the house of a fool. A fool lacks temper and tongue control. But finally, a third way is that a fool thinks of self and not of others. A fool thinks of self and not of others. It's true, we do need to think of self. At times we need to take care of self. The Bible instructs us to do that. But a fool thinks only of self and doesn't think of others. It says, in the house of the wise are stores of choice. But a foolish man devours all he has. Now, why does he devour all he has? Well, yes, because he's only thinking of today, but also because he's only thinking of himself. He's only thinking of himself. A foolish man brings, a wise son, I'm sorry, brings joy to his father, but a foolish son, grief to his mother. A foolish son brings grief to his father and bitterness to the one who bore him. A foolish person doesn't think of the grief and the bitterness that they bring to others, to their loved ones, because they only care about self and not about others. And it even gets worse than that. It says a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish man despises his mother. It's not only that the foolish don't think or consider others, but they come to the place of despising the very people that they should love. Now, any of us can become focused on it only on ourselves. You can become greedy and selfish without a lot of effort. But what we're doing when we do that is we're taking the way of folly. And one of the reasons that our Matthew 25 projects are so important to me is that they help us put the needs of others on our radar. And even as a church, I don't want us to be only thinking of ourselves. I want us to be thinking of others. I want us to be thinking of how we can somehow just come along and be a help to people that are working in our community, that are doing something where they're trying to make a difference for Christ. I want to come alongside them. And I want to say your needs are important. Not just us, not just what we need. And there are times when, as a church, you know, we're stressed about our own needs. But I think more than any other time, maybe that's the time we've got to say, look, it's not about us. It's not just about Lakeway. It's about what we can be, what we can do in our community to help others. And get no credit for it. Just to be there, just to serve, just to say others are important. Because if we get to where we only think of ourselves, that we're taking the way of folly, even as a church. I want to tell you the story of a fool. And it's found in in 1 Samuel 25. I'm not sure what page it is in the Blue Bibles. You might be able to find it fairly easily. But in 1 Samuel 25, just listen, would you? This story of a fool. It's in David's time. David hasn't become king yet, and he's got about 600 men who have sort of gathered themselves to him. And they're kind of roaming around the countryside, trying to just live off the land in as many ways they can and do service to others to kind of provide that. And he's in the area, the desert of Maon. And there's a certain man that lives there. He's got property, and he's very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in his hometown there. And his name was Nabal. What's funny about this story is there's three words for fool in the Old Testament, and one of them actually is the word Nabal, which makes us think that maybe this really wasn't his real name. I doubt if his mom decided to name him fool. But in this story, this is what he proves himself to be, Nabal. Okay? And his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband was surly, and he was mean in his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men, and he said to them, you know, go to Nabal and greet him in my name and say to him, long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now hear that it's sheep shearing time. And when your shepherds were with us, that is with David's men, we did not mistreat them. And the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. You can ask your own servants and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my young men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you find for them. So he's just saying, hey, look. And there's more to this story about how well they took care of Nabal's servants as they were shearing sheep and protected the shepherds, those who were shepherds of the, Nabal's group there. Well, that's what they were to say. So when David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message that David had told them to say, and they waited, it says. Nabal answered David's servant, Who is this David? You know, who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. You know, why should I take my bread and water and the meat that I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where? David's men turned around, went back, and when they arrived, they reported every word. And David said to his men, put on your swords. Somebody else is about to be a fool here too. So they put on their swords, and David put on his, and about 400 men went up with David while 200 stayed with the supplies. And one of the servants told Nabal's wife, Abigail, back at the ranch, David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us. And the whole time we were not in, that we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us all the time that we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. Abigail didn't think it over. Abigail lost no time, it says. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, some dress sheep, some grain, some roasted, some cakes of raisins cakes, some fig cakes, and she loaded them on donkeys, and she told her servants, go on ahead, I'll follow you. But she didn't tell Nabal about this. And as she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there was David and his men, and they were descending toward her, and she met them. And David had just said, it's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He's paid me back evil for good. And may God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him. That's anger, right? David's like, I am not going to stand for this. But Abigail saw David. She quickly got off her donkey and she bowed down before him with her face to the ground. And she fell at his feet and she said, my Lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you and hear what your servant has to say. May my Lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He's just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal, my master meaning David. And let this gift, which your servant has brought to my master, be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master, for David, because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound up securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. Nice choice of words by Abigail. Remember, David used the sling to kill Goliath. When the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant. And David said to Abigail, praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, it surely is the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you if you had not come quickly to meet me. Not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak. David accepted from her hand, told her to go home in peace. Maybe you know the rest of the story. She goes back. Nabal's having this great feast. He's really happy. He's drunk. She doesn't tell him anything until the next morning. And just when she tells him, his heart turns to stone. I don't know if he was just so angry that he had a heart attack or what happened. But he was in that condition for about 10 days until the Lord struck him. And that, my friend, is the life, a story of an incident in the life of a fool who said, you know, my things, you know, this is what's important to me, and I'm not concerned about others, who let his, could not be instructed, could not be told anything. It reminds me of a story that Jesus told in Luke chapter 12. When a man came up to him and said, you know, Jesus, I'm not getting my fair share of the inheritance. And Jesus just told him, he said, hey, I didn't come here to do that. And when Jesus says, watch out, be on guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he tells him this parable. He says, the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. And he thought to himself, you know, what shall I do? I've got no place to store all this great crops, I've all this good food that I've harvested. And he said, you know, this is what I'll do. I'm going to tear down my barn, and I'm going to build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, notice the wording, you fool, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. And then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And Jesus concludes by saying, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. And that's really the summation of what's going on in the life of a fool. Is that it comes back to the fact that a fool is the one who doesn't make God first in his life. It can happen to us. It can happen to many people. And today we want to say, let's not fall prey to the way of folly. Let us be people who answer the call to wisdom. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you today for such vivid illustration that you've given us, Lord, of someone named Nabal, someone named Fool. It shows us how we at times can be in a similar kind of way. We can get all about ourselves. We can think we have life, you know, just all wrapped up in what we need and what we want. We've got things stored up. We can say to ourselves, eat, drink, and be merry. And yet, Lord, what you're really calling us to do is to be dependent on you, is to have priorities that are established by a relationship with you, Lord, that helps us see that the wise person puts God first and the foolish person doesn't. Let us not, Lord, be a fool, but instead follow wisely in life, that we would be fully devoted followers of Christ. We pray in his name. Amen.